The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health and Mental Health. And I hope to have our co-host, Dr. Carol Smith, our Commissioner of Health and Mental Health, back with us soon. She is obviously very preoccupied with COVID-related matters. Many of us have in the health department, but she is really the person that is overseeing the whole picture. And she's doing a great job. And we hope to have her back soon. And today's topic is one that really ties into the pandemic in terms of how we build and improve personal and community health and resiliency. And in this case, it happens to be through cooking, sharing, buying healthy, locally grown food, and how that helps mitigate climate change, builds personal and community health and wellness and resiliency. And we have with us Maria Rettelbach, who is a best-selling author, artist, and local food activist, who's been working with farmers in the Hudson Valley of New York for the past 15 years to promote locally grown food and farms. She has written books. She is involved in a lot of really innovative projects. And rather than me having you talk about them and try to give you an overview, we'll ask Maria herself. So welcome, Maria. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. And it's nice to talk with you again. We know each other from Marble Town when I was a town supervisor there, and you came to visit. And we talked about that a little bit. It's very nice to see you and hear from you again. And Maria, tell us why we need to change how we eat, both in a personally and in our community.
Well, for me, this path started a number of years ago. When I became concerned about climate change. Also, I had quit smoking, and I had gained a bunch of weight. And so I sort of was on a quest for personal health, but I was also growing more concerned about climate change. And I began researching, and what I discovered is that the farmers, I was living in the city back then in New York City, and I had a farmer's market on my street. And I love the farmer's market. And what I learned slowly over the years is that eating whole foods and buying them from your local farmers as much as possible is not only really good for you, but it also has a lower carbon footprint and is good for your community. It helps the local economy because it's keeping your money closer to home. And there are a number of reasons why it lowers the carbon footprint of the food you're eating. After I jumped into it in a bit more depth, I learned that, 18% of the carbon footprint that's overheating the planet is because of the food that we eat and the food that we waste.
Wow. And in what ways does that, how does that happen? How does it, what are the, what are the mechanisms or causes of that?
Well, there are a whole lot. And, this number is wiggly. We're still learning, how to do this because there are so many different factors. But there are some really obvious things that we can point to. And one of the really big ones is meat. Guyden Eshel, who is based at Bard College, but is a nationally known environmentalist, and scientists have said that if we could reduce the amount of beef, lamb, and goat that we eat by 80% in the United States, we wouldn't have a carbon footprint problem at all with our food. Mm-hmm. So in a way, it's very simple, but we don't necessarily have to do it by that route. There are all different ways that we can lower the carbon footprint of the food we eat. And other meats also have a fairly large carbon footprint. Beef is 5 times bigger carbon footprint than pork, and a 25 times bigger.
Is that because of the methane gases? Is that what it is?
Yes. A big part of it is the methane gases, indeed. They're ruminants, the cows and goats and sheep are all ruminants. So, and methane is a particularly damaging gas for the greenhouse gas.
And with respect to locally grown food too, there's that element of the transportation, right? Because if you walk into your typical supermarket, they're getting food from all over the planet probably, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's complicated, but, you know, because there are some economies of scale and things like that. But yeah, in general, the shorter a distance your food travels, the less carbon it uses because it's not using fossil fuels. And also the fresher it is and the more that you're supporting local farming. And local farmers are really good for the local economy. It keeps our money local, and it keeps it keeps our money circulating within our community.
Second largest industry in Ulster County, agriculture.
Yes, it is. And a big part of the tourism industry as well.
Right. And we have some really fabulous multi-generational local family farms. And you know, I had the pleasure of meeting with a lot of those families and even helping to save two key heritage family farms. And we, you know, we did a lot of work in Marbletown in that respect with farmland protection. It's just so, you know, it's part of our cultural heritage, our historical heritage, our just what makes Ulster County one of the magnificent places, you know, that it is.
It really is. And the Rahnau Valley Growers, on whose board I serve, I got its start in Marbletown, I think, when you were the supervisor.
A little bit before. Well, I was kind of in a transition. It was like it kind of began with my predecessor and then, you know, kind of continued on and strengthened while I was there. Of course, it's not me and, I mean, the community coming together to make all of that happen, which was really, it's quite an amazing organization.
Yes, it is. And there's nothing much, it's very unusual in the United States because it represents all different farming practices. All the farmers of the valley are welcome members. And we have so many of them. We are so lucky here. And the diversity of the farms is only increasing. We now have a family of African rice farmers over in Ulster, just south of Kingston. There's an Indian farm in New Paltz. Lots of young people are coming here and starting up different kinds of farms and things we've seen before. There are herb farms, flower farms.
Right. And they're getting help from the farm hub in terms of getting started and which is really good.
Yes.
And having proximity, you know, in addition to the food that they're able to sell within our community, having proximity to the largest market in the world, the New York metro area, certainly provides a, you know, a really substantial market for them to keep on going, right?
Well, one would hope it's very difficult to crack that market. And one farmer in particular who I've been keeping tabs on, I've seen them over the last 3 years trying to get into the New York City market. And they've tried a bunch of different ways. And it is so difficult because the profit margins are so narrow. They get beat down on price. Small farms, you know, it's a big, big market. And so small farms have a rough time if they have a limited amount of produce to sell. So really, a lot of small farms do depend on our local markets. We still keep hoping to develop that New York City connection because the appetite there for locally grown food is great. So, you know, it's something we all just keep chipping away at in order to develop that market further. And we're making headway slowly but surely.
And you talked about in the notes for the show the benefits of sharing, cooking and sharing food with others, with neighbors. Talk to us about that. What is that about and why is that so important?
Well, there's an amazingly interesting book by Daniel Lustig. It's got this strange title, The Hacking of the American Mind, which I'm not sure why he chose that. But what it's about is it's about how he was a pediatric endocrinologist, and he was really concerned that a lot of his young patients were very, very sick with chronic metabolic diseases like diabetes and, you know, major obesity and even high blood pressure and things like that. And so he went back to research and he started looking at why. And he discovered that a big part of the problem was diet. And that in the last, 40 years or so, we have migrated into a diet of very processed food and heavily sugar laden, heavily fat laden, all the stuff we love to eat, but in moderation. It should be in moderation. And it turns out that a lot of the processed food is made from soybeans and wheat, which are very subsidized crops in the United States, and a lot of, sugar from corn. They just are really, really not good for us. And what happens is that there are two pathways to happiness in our brains. One is the serotonin path, and the other is the dopamine path. The dopamine path, the dopamine in our brains is initiated by things that give us an instant jolt of pleasure. Things like some sugar, looking at something we posted and seeing that, 50 people have liked it, gambling, all kinds of like short-term things that make us feel good in the moment. Mm-hmm. The serotonin pathway is different because it's about long-term happiness. So it's things that take a bit longer to cultivate, but give you a deeper sense of happiness. Like sitting and eating together with friends. Mm-hmm. And relaxing together. Now it's interesting because we have so many things in this culture that goose our dopamine. It's all kinds of things, and the consumer culture is really good at homing in on those and just giving us a thousand
perpetually feeding that reward system. Yeah.
Yes, and what happens is that when your brain is saturated with that much dopamine, it doesn't leave any room for the serotonin. And so getting all these quick jolts of pleasure actually blocks long-term happiness. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to do, if we want to be really happy, deeply happy and calmly happy, is we want to slow down. We want to, moderate those things that give us those quick jolts. We don't have to give them up entirely. I mean, I love playing games, and I really like playing poker. But, I'm not going to play it 24/7. And, of course, computer games is another thing that triggers our dopamine. So, the idea is just moderate, just take it back a notch. And cooking and eating with others is one of those things. The other side of that, of cooking and eating with others, is that history shows us that communities where people know each other and meet with each other and hang out together are stronger when there are challenging disasters that happen. I won't mince words. For instance, in New Orleans, when Katrina hit, some of the parishes that fared the best were the poorest because the people knew each other and they could help each other and they knew who lived down the street and next door and where the elders were and where the pets were and, all of that stuff.
And by the way, a lot of this is proven out because we're deeply immersed in data and statistics around population health, and what they call social associations have taken prominence in terms of measuring community wellness. Research study after research study has shown that communities that have strong social associations do better, and the people within them do better. And we see this so much so that Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, in their county health rankings, has social associations as one of their key criteria for measuring community wellness.
Wow, that's really interesting to know. I am going to check that out. That is
and the blue zones around the country, around the world, where longevity rates are much higher than average and chronic disease rates are lower, are also places where social associations take prominence. There's this one community in Pennsylvania, Italian American immigrant community, way lower rates of chronic disease, way higher longevity rates. So they sent public health researchers in for 2 years. To study, is it what is it? Diet, exercise, water, what is it? Social associations, people having each other's back and being there for each other. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and today we're talking about mitigating climate change and building personal and community health, wellness, and resiliency through buying, cooking, and sharing healthy, locally grown food. And our guest is Maria Reitelbach, who's a best-selling author, artist, and food activist, who have been working in our community for 15 years to promote locally grown food and farms. Maria, In the notes, you talked about some really innovative projects that you're engaged in, as well as some of your books. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about those projects and books?
Sure. Well, I am working on one project that is fascinating is that I'm working with a group in Chester, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia, called Singularity Botanicals. And it's founded by an African-American woman who is a Buddhist and a Quaker. And both of those communities are rather looped into the project. And it's a climate resilience project also. And it's about creating, it's about growing herbal plants, medicinal herbs, creating teas and tinctures that help support resilience in many different ways, calm anxiety, you know, fight depression, that kind of thing, build mood, but also a lot of meditations and visualization exercises, all intended to help strengthen us.
Nice combination.
Yes, it really is. She's brilliant. She is a brilliant, her background is in psychotherapy. And so the idea is that all of these wellness supplies are available for contributions, but they're delivered to the population of Chester, Pennsylvania, which is this beat up rust bucket town with a lot of pollution. They're given to the residents of Chester for free. And we just launched it in January, and then COVID hit, and all of a sudden we know that African-American people were much harder hit than many other communities, and they needed, you know, the care. And so we were able to pivot and create a respiratory distress tea and tincture package for them, and delivered hundreds of you know, kind of care packages full of those.
And is it grant funded?
No, well, she does get, they have been getting some grant money. It's a nonprofit endeavor, and it's called Singularity Botanicals. There's a website that can be visited if you're interested.
Yeah, interesting.
It is really a cool project, and I feel so good to be working on it, because I think it really does something that nothing else I've heard of addresses in such a nice way. My main project right now is a cookbook called Turning the Tables, Cooking to Thrive in the 21st Century. And I was talking to the executive director of Cornell Cooperative Extension, Ulster County, Jared
yeah.
Bruno,
yeah.
who's a wonderful scientist, environmentalist. And he said that they wanted to do a climate change cookbook. And I said, well, what do you know? I've been thinking of doing a climate change cookbook. My previous cookbook was a local foods cookbook, and it was nice. It went through we had two printings, and it was a nice project. This one's a little more ambitious. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to approach it in a new way, because I looked at the climate change cookbooks that were out there, and a lot of them were very heavy on text, on climate change information, which is all good. But it was even more climate change information that I wanted to read about. You know, I'm convinced about climate change. I know a lot of the basic facts. I try to keep up on news. And beyond that, what I really want to know is, what can I do to do my part? And how do I do that? And so I've been really enjoying cooking for a long time and working with farmers. So what I decided to do was, I thought, okay, I'll do master recipes. So these would be recipes where you can swap out the fresh produce and then add pantry staples that you're going to be likely to have, you know, in your kitchen at all times, simple things, and create endless recipes. And so the book will have only about 25 recipes, but they will be endlessly variable. So we'll have things like an egg frittata that you can make with any vegetable you have, and fruit and nut bread that uses whatever fruits are ripe and whatever nuts or seeds you might have, harvest grain bowls, fruit crisp, agua fresca, hearty soups, hearty vegetable soups, frozen fruit popsicles, dinner salads, salsa, pestos, you know, all kinds of things, sheet pan dinners that are quick to make. Many of them just use one or two dishes to make. None of them are difficult, and lots of room for creativity. And so the second thing we did that is very different is that we did them in a sort of infographic or a comic book style, so that the recipes are all step-by-step illustrated, showing you how to put them together and, you know, giving you a really nice visual of how to do that. And the ingredients are represented visually, and it's fun. It really makes it fun. I have been a comic book aficionado for a long, long time. I wrote a best-selling book about Mad Magazine quite a while ago. And comic books are close to my heart, and I really think that they do a wonderful job of conveying information in a way that is lighthearted and fun and celebratory. And that's what I want this book to be, because we need to have fun and we need to enjoy ourselves while we do what we can to make our lives better and to make the world better. So that's the combination that I'm working with. The book will also have information about avoiding food waste. I have a illustrated decision tree. One of them is called the weird, one is the weird vegetable thrill ride, and the other is the weird fruit thrill ride. So that when you go to the farmer's market or you go to the U-Pick and you see a fruit or a vegetable that doesn't look the same as the ones that you've seen in the supermarket that all look exactly the same, you can look at this chart and see, you know, is it too big, too little, too soft, too hard? Is it squishy?
That's so great. It reminds me of what the Heidi Kirshner, who's director of the Y here in Kingston, they have a program, the Starfish program, where they bring kids out to local farms. And some of these kids bring back vegetables that their families have never seen at all. It's like bringing back something from a different planet, and the excitement of that and trying it. And, you know, it's great.
Well, it's a little scary too. You know, it's scary to eat things you've never eaten before. We have that wariness as humans to save us from getting poisoned. But, you know, it's a good thing to overcome. I mean, I myself went through this learning curve, you know, where I'd take potatoes home from the farmer's market and they would have all these little lumps on them. And I wasn't sure whether the potato had, whether it had bugs or whether that was just the way this potato wanted to be. So, really, it's partly my own learning curve that inspired me.
Right. And I guess cooking now at home is even more, it's always been important, but it's more utilized than ever. I know in my own family, I'm, you know, going out far less frequently and cooking a lot at home. But sometimes it would understandably difficult to do it with friends in a pandemic time. So how would you recommend that? And then we have to get to your contact information, because we are almost running out of time.
I know. And, you know, potlucks and block parties are really a good way to share food with people. And we are living in a pandemic, and it looks like it's going to go on for a bit in the future. Nevertheless, I have been getting together with friends and family. We eat outdoors. Cookouts are, you know, really a nice way to gather. And I'm lucky to have a big screened porch at my house. And so we distance there. And so as long as, you know, you keep a safe distance, it's possible. It feels awkward. And, it's a little painful not to be able to hug the people that you love.
Yeah.
But it's better than, you know, than not seeing them at all. And it really does raise your spirits. It raises mine for sure, yeah. I know.
Well, I just have my dog right there at the on the deck, you know, staring at me while I'm eating. So, unfortunately, we're running out of time. So, Maria, tell us your contact information and how people can learn more about all the amazing things you're doing and how to get in touch with you.
You can find out about the cookbook at turningthetablescookbook.com.
Okay, great.
And that's where you can reach me. And thank you so much for taking such good care of us, Vin.
Oh, you're quite welcome. And thank you for all the work you do in the community. We really do live in an amazing community. I'm so continuously amazed at the people, you know, the people that are doing great work here for and with each other, and it's really terrific. And that's about all the time we have. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.